Oh, yes, indeed, there are more questions than answers. Why does a woman work 10 years to change a man's habits and then complain he's not the man she married? My name is Adrian Lee and I am your host. Welcome to the show More Questions Than Answers, the only paranormal quiz show anywhere in the world. Each week my guests and I will search the world's newspapers, websites and TV shows just for you to bring you the very best in paranormal talk radio, entertainment and enlightenment. We'll then test each other's knowledge of the week's events of the mysterious, strange, supernatural, unusual, bizarre, and just plain weird. If you have just tuned in especially to hear the show, then I admire your taste. If you have just tuned in by accident, then I admire your luck. I am huddled under my quilt with a large flashlight and a nice cup of tea with tonight's guests, somewhere in the barren wildernesses of the Midwest Plains, with the sound of my elderly mother snoring distantly from the room next door. So snuggle under your covers, turn out the light and hold on tight. The rules are very simple. Points will be awarded randomly for being interesting and for making me laugh or shiver in horror. Extra points will be available for shock and awe value. To help me control my rowdy panel of recidivists and reprobates, I will employ what I have called the inappropriate bell. An example of this would be... The panel have no idea what's coming and I have no idea what stories they have for tonight's show. And we are completely live and unedited, so what could possibly go wrong? So without any further ado, let us embrace the darkness and introduce tonight's guest panel. Firstly, the mysterious Heather Morris. She does all of her best work in the shadows as a team leader of the International Paranormal Society. She is an expert on audio and EVPs and enjoys throwing cola at her co-hosts and eating onions. Welcome to the show, Heather.
I'm happy to be here. 90% here tonight.
90%. You're getting there. Perhaps next week we can have 100 and then that'll be fabulous.
And you'd be lucky.
I would be very lucky. We move mercurially now to the stoically efficient Kim Gore. Kim has been an effective and integral part of the International Paranormal Society and she brings her love of cage fighting and the ability to sing opera in the shower to tonight's show. And I've seen her Buccini. It's very impressive. Welcome to the show, Kim.
Hello.
And finally, but not least, Greg Gore. Greg is unflappable and driven in bringing his tech skills to the International Paranormal Society. His assiduity towards cameras and filming make me wonder what type of shows he is producing in his spare time. Greg brings his unwavering command of Swedish massage to tonight's show, and I'm glad he takes a very hands-on approach. Welcome to the show, Greg.
Hello.
Firstly, what I'd like to do for listeners is that last week we had a few questions arise and we didn't know the answers. So we have spent literally minutes of our week researching. I'm pleased to announce a moose has either two or four nipples, depending on which website you go to. The jury is still out. I'm led to believe, based on a deer, that I believe a moose has two nipples. So I'm happy to stick my neck out and embrace the fact a moose has two nipples.
You're ready to stick your neck out and your hands out to embrace the nipples of a moose.
Well, it's not the touching that's a problem. It's just catching the bloody things. They're quick and nippy. By the way, a $1,000 bill does actually exist. They were produced in the late 1930s, and the president that is on that particular bill is Woodrow Wilson. So I've never seen one. I'm sure many of our listeners will never see one. But if you have no idea what I am talking about, you need to listen to last week's show. And where were you? Where was you last week? Why weren't you listening? We had a pizza before we started the show, and we had a communal pizza. And I'd just like to tell you a pizza joke. I think it's very topical, based on the meal we've just had. The Dalai Lama walks into a pizza restaurant, and he says, I want to have one with everything. No? There needs to be some... Oh, Greg, how was that pizza for you? Was that working well? It's a big mistake, I have to say, giving Greg full access to all the sounds that he has available at his fingertips. Anything could happen in the next hour. What I'd like to do, we're very close to Christmas, obviously, so I think what I'd like to do, just to start off and to relax our guests, I'd perhaps like to go around the room, and I'd like you to tell me, if you can recall, the best Christmas present you have ever had. You were looking very whimsical and quizzically into the corners of the room and gazing around. Who can tell me, Heather, you look like you, you can't remember a Christmas present you had that was better than any other.
Better than any other.
The best Christmas present you've ever had. It's not a difficult question, surely.
I haven't had that many Christmas presents that I remember.
No, that's a terrible thing to say. That's shocking.
So I don't have any.
Kim.
I know exactly what my best Christmas present would be.
There you go. Not what it will be, what it was.
What it was.
Yeah.
What it was, yes. I don't remember what age I was. I'm going to guess 10. And my mother, my parents didn't have hardly any money at all. Most Christmases were based off of whatever they could make. And I got the most beautiful bathrobe that my mom had made for me. It was all kinds of different greens, silk material, ribbon, satin.
It was Joseph's coat of many colors, no
doubt.
Pretty
much.
Where did it end up? Do you know? Where did it go?
No, I wish I had it. I don't know.
You don't know where that's gone. Greg, what was your favorite ever? Well, your best ever Christmas present?
When I was about 5 years old, I got a set of styrofoam building blocks. I could make forts and I could keep mom and dad out.
Wow. That's a fab. Isn't it true, though, that, you know, when you get given a Christmas present and you end up, you know, playing in the box and using the box and leaving the present untouched, I guess. Heather, you're looking like you've just discovered a memory that you've made a synaptic link and not thought of for a very long time.
Yes, I do remember. When I was very little, I got a Weeble Wobbles.
Uh-huh. Weebles wobble, but they don't fall down.
Yes, and I got the treehouse. The Weeble Wobble treehouse. Do you remember the treehouse?
I remember that. Yeah, you could carry it. There was a handle on it.
Yeah.
I always thought they were really ugly. I mean, it looked like spending a night in a burns victim unit at the hospital. I thought they looked pretty rough.
How could you say that? They were nice and smooth and round.
And all their faces were kind of bright pink,
that's what a burns unit victim looks like.
They didn't have any arms and legs either, to be fair, did they? But I'm just saying they weren't particularly good looking. I'd have nightmares about.
You're going to get coal, aren't you, for Christmas?
Coal again? I'll have enough for a fire by the end of the decade, no doubt. Two things spring to mind for me. When I was maybe 8 or 9, I think you might call them slot car racing over here, where you get a little model car and it sits on a track and you put the brushes into the slot and you press a button and the car whizzes around the track with the aid of electricity. What would you call that?
Special needs toys.
Just don't hurt anyone. Wow. So Kim starts the game on -5. Heather's on -3. That slapping sound was a high five, but that cost Heather 3 points. The thing I remember about that, I'd call it Scale Electrics. It's a Scale Electrics in Britain. But I remember waking up really early in the morning, sprinting down the stairs, burst open the lounge where the Christmas tree was, and there was my dad with his eyes wide open as if he'd been up all night. And I went to pick up. He'd laid everything out for me, so it was all ready to go. He'd built the track, in effect. And I went to pick up the handheld, you know, kind of device that you have. It was red hot. I suspect my dad had been up all night, had no sleep, was playing with it until I came down in the morning. But I also remember back in 1982, I got given one of the first ever home computers that ever came out in Britain. It was designed by a gentleman called Sinclair, Clive Sinclair. And it was a small little computer, and it had a rubberized keyboard, and you could have games on it, but you had to play it on a cassette and play the game through the cassette. And it was little stick men running around, in effect. It was 48K, would you believe? That amount of memory. Can you believe that? I've probably got more on my watch now, but that kept me awake for weeks and weeks and weeks, and no one saw me, and my parents just fed me pizzas and pancakes under the doorframe. So, that's everybody's favourite Christmas present from years past. We are going to move swiftly on to the first round of tonight's show. It's the ghost of Christmas past. I'm going to start off with a story in Britain, actually. It says, was the White Lady of Rufford seen in a photograph taken by a teenager in a doorway of an abbey? Star-thinker teenager may have captured images of a ghostly white lady of Rutherford, who is believed to be the spirit of the ill-fated Arbella Stewart. There's always a white lady, isn't there? Mm-hmm. They can't just be a normal person or someone wearing purple or green. Or
a black one.
Oh, there
it's
might be
white or black.
There might be some black ladies knocking around.
Those are shadow people.
And monks. You often get black monks, don't you? Or brown monks, I guess. I think Benedictine monks wear black, if my memory serves me right. He says, look closely and you may just be able to make out a ghostly image on these photos captured by a quick-witted teenager. You don't often get the words quick-witted and teenager in a sentence, do you? Cameron Hamilton caught the misty figure on his iPod Touch whilst visiting Rufford Abbey in Nottinghamshire with friends. The photographs show the arched stone doorway to the medieval solarium area of the ruins and appear to show a misty white figure. Now, I've actually seen these photographs. If people wish to see them, they can do that. They can visit our Facebook site, More Questions Than Answers with Adrian Lee. And all of tonight's stories will be posted on this. If you wish to see what the misty white lady looks like in the doorway, you're more than welcome to do so. Cameron 15 from South Drive in Bilsthorpe said his belief in the supernatural had been bolstered after seeing the ghoulish snaps. I was quite surprised and was not expecting it. I believe in ghosts and the supernatural. And he's further convinced to me that these do actually exist based on these photographs. Debbie Hibbert, who manages the Tourist Information Centre at Rufford Abbey, which is managed by Newark and Sherwood District Council, said it certainly looked like a figure, like a young woman in full old-fashioned dress hovering over the door. Nottinghamshire County Council Visitor Services Manager Linda Hardy. By the way, that has to be the longest job description known to man, isn't it? Can you imagine her sitting there doing that job with a little kind of name badge on her chest there, and it says Nottinghamshire County Council Visitors Services Manager. And the person next to her gets poked in the eye every time she scratches her armpit. She says, she's based at Rufford Abbey, she says this history behind the White Lady is as follows. She says, the local legend that one of the ghosts of Rufford is the White Lady, who some say is the spirit of Arbella Stewart, tragic granddaughter of Bess Hardwick. Her parents were secretly married at the Abbey. I've heard one or two of the sightings by local people in past years. She calls this tragic, it's the tragic White Lady, but the only explanation she can give is that her parents were married at the Abbey. So let me get this right. The only reason it appears so far to be tragic is that her parents got married. And, I guess many people would say that's where tragedy starts in many respects. Rufford Abbey hosted an evening. No bitterness. Rufford Abbey hosted an evening to look for ghosts a few weeks back. And with its background as a Cistercian abbey and a grand country house, there have been many numerous sightings of different ghosts throughout the years. Now, I've actually seen this photograph. I have to say, it just looks like a white fog or mist. When she says you can make out the face, you can make out the jewellery on this particular ghost, they must be looking very hard, or the brain's playing tricks, because it looks to me as if someone's breathed out and then they've taken a photograph with a flash and all the moisture and water droplets have reflected back to the camera. So, you know, perhaps I'd be interested in listeners going onto that Facebook site and looking at that photograph and seeing what they think. But to me personally, I wouldn't use it as evidence. It just looks like a mist behind a doorway. I certainly don't see the features and the jewellery, but I guess it's in the eye of the person who's viewing. So we shall see. Who else has stories for me tonight on hauntings and ghosts? Heather, you're looking like you're raring to go and to win back the 3 points you've lost already.
Guess what?
Go for it.
Krampus is coming.
Krampus. I know Krampus. I will talk to you about this after your story, but I've seen...
It's Santa's little-known companion.
I know. I've seen this happen in Vienna, in Austria. You go for it, and I shall talk to you about my experiences of Krampus.
Everyone knows the story of Santa Claus, but in many parts of the world, the story of his companion, Krampus, has somehow fallen to the back pages of history. While Santa brings gifts to good kids, Krampus is there to drag the bad ones away in his own sack, probably not for an all-you-can-carry visit to a local toy store. Krampus is so eager to play his role in the Christmas season that he doesn't even wait until Christmas, and even today he's celebrated in early December in parts of Italy, Germany, and Austria. There, parades and festivals are held to terrorize local children and probably bring laughs and boos to the adults, especially the ones wearing the Krampus costumes. Now, it says here, Krampus is represented as a beast-like creature, generally demonic in appearance.
It's not Donald Trump, is it?
The creature has roots in Germanic folklore. However, its influence has spread far beyond German borders. Traditionally, young men dress up as Krampus and roam the streets, frightening children with rusty chains and bells.
This is a phenomenon I've actually witnessed. When I lived in Vienna and I was working, lecturing in Austria, I actually saw this take place, and it is absolutely horrifying. All the parents and kids line the streets, and then these guys come out dressed as the most demonic beings and the most demonic beasts, and they go around and they absolutely terrorize the kids, and they look terrible.
I've seen pictures of them. That's crazy.
The kids are absolutely scared, witless, and they grab them and they kind of wrestle with them.
So it's more than one. It's not like a one Santa Claus thing.
Oh, no. They roam the streets, and the parents, everyone in the village comes outside, and almost it's an excuse for kind of sexual molestation. I mean, they grab women and slap bottoms, and they put kids in sacks, and it's horrendous. These poor children. This does actually highlight, in many ways, how Germans turn out, how they are. But, you know, if you're looking at making some sort of psychoanalytic review or paper on this, you're welcome to do so.
I had never heard of this before, ever.
It wasn't until you brought it up literally 5 minutes ago that I'd completely forgotten. But yeah, it's actually quite distressing in many ways. It would be banned in other countries, I'm absolutely sure of that. It's quite a horrific practice in many regards.
So the listeners out there have to go out and look for a picture on the internet of Krampus.
It'd be better if there was YouTube footage, but you know, these young teenagers or these young men that dress up as Krampus actually take liberties a little bit. And it reminds me, I was told a story. There was a gentleman called Rod Hull in Britain, and he made an entire career out of having some sort of emu puppet where his arm was the neck of the puppet and he's got the beak operated with his hands, in effect. And there's some very famous YouTube footage, I'm sure, of him being interviewed on television where this bird just goes crazy and he just attacks everyone with it. But I had a friend who was a ventriloquist, and he knew this particular gentleman, and he literally said that he'd be goosing all the chorus dancers with this bird, and it was just an excuse to go around and molest people. So, you know, a similar thing, I guess. You are going to have points in abundance. I'm going to bring you back to parity with a nice big goose egg, or an emu's egg, in actual fact. You're now on zero. And that's for reminding me of my time when I lived in Vienna, Austria. Kim, what have you got tonight for me in the ghosts and hauntings round?
I have Mark Perry to stand trial for murder of a vampire gigolo, Shane Chartres Abbott. Mark Perry, the man accused of ordering the hit on vampire gigolo Shane Chartres Abbott, will stand trial for murder in March. Perry, 45, appeared briefly in the Supreme Court via video link from prison on Friday. He and two other men have pled not guilty to murdering Chartres Abbott. Crown Prosecutor Andrew Tinney told the court the trial of the three men, which is due to begin on March 17th, was expected to take 6 weeks.
Why was he classed as a gigolo? That's isn't that a person that gets paid for sex?
It's like, yes.
Okay.
And it never gets into that part of it.
It just doesn't discuss it.
It does discuss why he's a vampire, though.
Okay.
He sucks the money out of people.
Oh, man. Hang on. There's a whole roll of nickels coming through.
Oh, God.
Hang on. The inappropriate. I will give myself minus one there for such a terrible joke.
Chartres Abbott is 28, and he had been on trial in 2003 in the county court for the rape and mutilation of Perry's former girlfriend when he was killed. He was shot by two men as he left his Reservoir home to go to court on June 4, 2003. Chartres Abbott's girlfriend watched as the killers shot the gigolo in the neck, then bashed her father. The court had heard bizarre claims a week earlier that Chartres Abbott had told a client he was a 200-year-old vampire who drank blood to survive.
But he seems to have died with a bullet wound.
Right. Maybe it was a silver bullet.
Ooh. I thought that only worked for werewolves. Haven't you got one of those
probably.
In your bedside cabinet, Kim?
What, a werewolf?
Wow, wow. No, put it back. There we go. Lycanthropy as we speak. Am I right in thinking that the original offence was in 2003? That's like
the
10
original
years.
Offense that he got murdered for was in 2003,
oh,
and
I
then
see.
They finally did their retaliation in 2000.
Well, more recently.
Yeah.
I just, it seemed like a long time between the actual event taking place. They must have been very bitter and very twisted if it took them 10 years to finally catch up with him. But I guess that's what anger does to a person. Have you got any more to that story, Kim?
Nope.
That's it. I find that remarkable. I like the fact it mentions he's a vampire gigolo, but nowhere in the text does it mention where he gets his gigolo status from. I wonder what that literally means in Italian. There's always more questions than answers, doesn't there? I thought a gigolo... No, it's not a flute, Heather, if that's what you're thinking. I will give you points for that. That's a fabulous story. And who doesn't want a vampire gigolo story around Christmas time? So I will give you 3 points, and you are now on a glorious -2. I'm going to take us back to Britain at this moment in time. It says, while many will be expecting a few presents, some turkey, and all the other trimmings that come with Christmas Day, it seems like the nation should also be ready for a zombie apocalypse. Ladbrokes, which is a bookmaker's in Britain, has announced surprising odds of 2,000 to 1 for a zombie apocalypse to happen on December the 25th this year. To put that into perspective, Prince Harry marrying Miley Cyrus is slightly more foreseeable, with odds of 500 to 1, and a white Christmas in London is actually 5 to 1. Despite this, zombie expert and author of the Haynes Zombie Survival Manual, Sean Page, is urging people to prepare for the worst. The public are always interested in the odds of a white Christmas, but they should be more concerned by the increasing likelihood of a zombie apocalypse, he said. The most likely time for an outbreak is during the busy festive season, as people spend more time in large groups, making it easier for the zombie virus to spread, triggering the apocalypse. Now, I'm confused. I don't proclaim to be a zombie expert in any way, shape or form, but I thought you became infected by a bite. What's the talk of a virus spreading in... Is that the beginning of that particular apocalypse? How does this work? I'm looking at you, Heather, for all things zombie related.
Why is that?
You look like a person who watches a lot of zombie films, that was all.
No, I don't.
It was the way you kind of, you know, struggle when you're walking with your arms out and all the groaning you do on a regular basis. Wow. Ladbrokes spokesman Alex Donoghue said...
Points are being awarded as we speak.
What, to me? Yeah, I'll give myself a couple of points. Thank you for that. I'm now on 2. He says, Ladbrokes spokesman Alex Donoghue said, we are confident the odds of a zombie apocalypse are at 2,000 to 1, and they're correct. And although the public should exert caution over the Christmas period, they should not be unduly concerned about the chances of the undead rising up to attack and eat the living. This is a lose-lose situation, though, in many ways, isn't it? Because if you win that bet at 2,000 to 1, it means there's been a zombie apocalypse. And at that point, surely money becomes redundant and we go back to a kind of medieval society. But imagine at Christmas the fighting, the groaning, the staggering around, and that's just without the zombies, of course.
That's with my family.
Well, that's, you know, I'm glad you said that live on air and not me, but I'm sure you're looking forward to Christmas dinner with all the trimmings with your family. That brings the round to a glorious, hauntingly zombie-walking halt. So far, Greg is yet to score. I am on 2 points. Kim is on -2, and Heather has a big round 0. We're going to move swiftly on to the round we call Green Men and Hairy Beasties. That sounds like your stomach after you ate the pizza earlier. There we go. I'm going to start with a story here that comes from the US Congress. It has the title, US Congress Has Close Encounter Over Extraterrestrial Life. Witnesses from NASA and MIT suggest to House Committee that scientists may be on the verge of a breakthrough in search of aliens. They convened on Wednesday to take up an abiding mystery of the universe. Are we Earthlings alone? After about 90 minutes of testimony, Committee Chair Lama Smith of Texas gaveled the hearing to an inconclusive close. Who would have thought that meeting would have been inconclusive after 90 minutes? Surely everything you would need to know about aliens existing could be covered in 90 minutes. It says, however, it wasn't a fruitless outing. In impassioned testimony, witnesses from NASA, MIT and the Library of Congress described a crossroads in the search for life out there and suggested scientists may be on the verge of a breakthrough. This is the first time in human history we have the technological research to reach across the threshold, said Dr. Sarah Sager, an MIT professor and 2013 MacArthur Junius Grant recipient. Her work focuses on the detection of biosignatures, gases on distant planets. large volumes of which may indicate life, whether intelligent life or single-cell bacteria. Sega testifies that the James Webb Space Telescope, scheduled for launch in 2018, and other advances are changing the search for alien life forms. If life really is everywhere, we actually have a shot at it, she says. NASA announced last month that the Kepler mission had discovered 3,500 potential planets in the Milky Way galaxy, including 647 thought to be the right distance from stars to support inhabitants. The Hubble Space Telescope has detected water in the atmospheres of five planets outside of our solar system, according to two studies released this week. The chance is very high of life elsewhere in the universe, Sega said. The question is there life near here, in our neighbourhood of stars? We think the chances are good. This is a really interesting report, partly because several years ago, if people would have said to me, what are the chances of alien life? I probably would have said very thin. Now when we're being presented with the fact that they believe there are 10 billion stars, 7,000 of which we can see with the naked eye just by looking up at the night sky. If you think just with the ones we can see, that out of those 7,000, they're all little suns, of course, like our own, and there are planets going around every single one. We read a report several weeks ago to suggest that they believe planets circle every single star in the galaxy, and it would be ridiculous with 10 billion stars, and if each star had 10 planets wrapped around it, you know, the figures must be astronomical. It's not a case of are there aliens and life out there, but how much in many respects. If you ask me now, I would say there's definitely a 100% chance that we have life on other planets. It's just whether we can access it and whether we can get to these planets now, I would suggest. It just amazes me how quickly things turn around. When I was a child, it was convention that there was nine planets, and I had a poster on my wall in the 1970s next to a woman scratching her ass in a tennis outfit and Farrah Fawcett, and it said there was nine planets. It now suggests, just in the ones they've seen, there's 3,500. It's truly remarkable. I will give myself points just for awe and wonder value. I am now on a resplendent 5. Oh, Heather's just given me another 1. Thank you for that.
No, I said it's only worth 1.
It's only worth 1, is it? I'm sorry to hear that. On the back, well, let's hear your story then, and I'll see if it's worth 1 or not. Let's hear what you've got under UFOs and hairy beasties, our cryptozoology. What have you got for me?
Ooh, have you got your Christmas shopping done?
I've got some of it done, but there's going to be certain presents taken back at this, right? I will see.
Well, have I got an idea for any of you listeners out there that haven't got your Christmas presents?
This is
going to
be last minute shopping, isn't it?
It is, and boy, is this unique. This taxidermy mice chess set is the coolest thing ever.
Stuffing mice.
Now you can play out the battle for Redwall right in front of you with stuffed mice. These black and white custom taxidermy pieces made by SD user The Curious 13 make up what might be the most creative chess set ever. Rachel Garcia, 31, spoke to HuffPost Weird about her full set of real dead mice adorned in armor and royal garb. I started to build a chess set once in high school out of clay, and I told myself I was never going to learn how to play chess until I built a whole set. After picking up taxidermy, Garcia decided to make the weirdest chess set she could. She said it took her about 30 days, working 2 to 3 hours each day, to make her Mouseketeers. The fabric used is mostly scrap fabric found around my house, she said.
So she's dressed them up?
Oh, God, yeah. Okay. I have a picture for you.
They're not
Give
naked.
Me a second. No, they're not naked mice.
Well, that picture's going to be really useful for our listeners, isn't it?
Yes. Use your imagination, folks. The shields that the knights used were from pieces off of a bracelet she had. On her SD page, Garcia notes that the mice were taken from a captive breeding facility that distributes frozen rodents to feed reptiles. She assured people on her page that it is better for the mice to be battling it out on the chessboard than to be in the belly of a snake.
Unless it doesn't really matter when you're dead, does it? That's the point.
Her last chess set was sold on Monday for $450, but was her last for the time being. With her newfound attention, Garcia says she's already started working on her next set. I would imagine so if she got $450 from the last one.
Well, I'm just thinking, I'm not an expert on chess, but there's 16 pieces on each side. Is that right? So you've got 32 pieces to make. I wouldn't want to taxidermy 32 mice.
Well, she loves it. She thinks it's fun. Would you like to see a little?
I would love to see, and I shall describe it in glorious technicolor.
You describe it for me.
Oh my.
It's great, isn't it?
They do look quite sweet. It would be funny if she actually used live mice in a chess game. You just use like a hot glue gun. Maybe a nail gun.
No, that's not funny.
I was thinking of Star Wars. Do you remember the first Star Wars film
they
where
used C-3PO? Stuffed mice?
No, I don't recall them using stuffed mice.
Those were the Ewoks.
Those were the Ewoks. Well, there isn't little men inside these suits, is there? These are actual mice. They do look quite sweet. I guess I'm looking at the bishops. So I'm looking at four mice all together. The third one in looks like he's drunk, but they're wearing little mitres and they're standing on their hind legs.
Yes, and there's white mice and there's black mice.
Black mice, well, of course there is. Wow, ebony and ivory.
Aren't they great?
They do
love
look,
them.
They do look cool. I'm not sure I'd want to play chess with a lot of stuffed mice, but
great for your cats too, people.
Well, I was thinking of the Star Wars film where Chewbacca. In fact, I've got Chewbacca here. This doubles up for your stomach, doesn't it? Do you remember when Chewbacca was playing with C-3PO and they had a chess set where everything was killing everything else? And I think Obi-Wan Kenobi or Han Solo, I think, said, you know, you don't want to beat a Wookiee. They don't take losing very well. And C-3PO says, well, what will it do? And it says, well, it'll take your arms and legs off. So he lets him win. Am I just talking to myself?
Has I no don't one remember seen that scene.
I don't either.
So I've got three people sat around the table that don't remember Star Wars.
I remember something like that on Star Trek once, but with Data.
Wow, I'm obviously showing my age. Star Wars has a place in my heart.
I'm going to have to watch it now.
Well, the first film I ever saw at the cinema was Star Wars. And it was in East London, and it was a big old 1920s Art Deco theatre with all the gold, you know, plaster work and the big red lush velvet curtains, and it was a huge screen, and suddenly, you know, you have that trailing type going into the distance about a galaxy far, far away, and all the music comes up, and I was sat there as a 7-year-old, wide-eyed, just amazed. I'd never seen anything like it. I mean, what a really good film to start you off as a film to see. I guess on that note, what was the first film you ever remember seeing at the cinema, Heather?
The Muppets.
You saw The Muppets. Which mm-hmm. one? Can you remember?
No idea.
Just a Muppet film.
It was a Muppet film.
It was a Muppet film. Kim, what do you remember seeing?
James Bond. I'm trying to remember which one it was.
So how old was you? You got into a James Bond film, did you?
Mm-hmm.
It was an old black and white scene of a train coming towards the cinema screen. And
who
everyone
was the
running.
Actor? That might help us narrow it down.
I want to say it was Moonraker.
Okay. That's Moonraker wasn't made, I don't think, until about 78, 79. So I don't know if that helps. That was around that time, wasn't it? Greg, what did you see?
So Herbie the Love Bug.
Oh, Herbie. Well, that's not bad. That could be worse, couldn't it? I was thinking of all the first... Next week, perhaps we'll talk about the first singles and albums we ever bought, and that would be a bit more embarrassing. But Muppets is ace, and James Bond is good. Star Wars is excellent, and you can't knock Herbie. So, yes, mice. They look very sweet, and we shall post that story on our website. More questions and answers on Facebook with Adrian Lee. If during the course of the week you see stories that you think I should be covering, then just post the link on our Facebook site, More Questions and Answers with Adrian Lee, and I will look to include them in the show, and I will even give you a word of thanks and a shout out for helping me with my research. Or you can send me an email at mqta@rocketmail.com. Kim, you are on a resplendent -2. What have you got me for UFOs, cryptozoology and hairy beasties?
I have reindeer recovered after escaping from Santa during a lighting ceremony.
Well, they tried to catch them alight. How'd you make a reindeer go woof? You pour petrol on it.
Where are the crickets?
There's no crickets. It's just topical. I'm here all week. Try the fish, I guess. So tell me how this comes about, Kim.
A reindeer that ran away from Santa during the annual lighting celebration in Dillon, Colorado on Thursday was found after leading members of the local police department on an overnight chase.
Was found in a sandwich.
Did they find him with a red nose?
They had to use another reindeer to find him. While Santa was inside the La Riva building visiting children, the renegade reindeer was able to jump the wall of its enclosure and make its escape.
I like the way they
use...
It was
a flying reindeer.
It was. I like the fact they have to use another reindeer to try and find it. It's almost like he's on the ledge of a building and there's another reindeer down below.
Down.
Yeah, it's not worth it. She's not worth it, Gavin. Come down. She's not worth
Gavin.
It. Gavin. Well, I was thinking of a reindeer name and the first thing I thought of was Gavin. There was Blitzen... Rudolph.
And Gavin?
Gavin, Dopey, Bashful, Dopey, Sneezy. What were
Comet
the other ones?
Cupid.
Yeah.
That's Donner and Blitzen.
Donner Kebab, that's
and,
it.
What and else? Gavin.
And Gavin. You must remember Gavin.
Jesus.
You know, perhaps it's British, but it's a British thing. I mean, you know, it's imperial. So how did they find it? I'm interested to know.
They actually did use a second reindeer, and they corralled it.
Ah. So you catch a reindeer with a reindeer. Useful information at this time of the year. If anyone has a reindeer that has escaped, you just find another reindeer. That leads us stoically onto the psychic round. If you remember last week, we all pretended to be psychic, many of us. Some of us were spot on, of course. I did say that the World Cup in 2014 for the soccer was going to be held in Brazil. And last Friday, they drew the balls out of a big pot to see who would be seeded and in which groups they would be in. And there was 8 groups altogether and 32 teams. And the simple thing I asked you to do for me, although you made it very complicated, as it turns out, Heather, the simple thing I made you to do for me was to just tell me, out of 8, which pot Brazil would be in. And Pancetta the psychic pig guessed correctly. She scored, she got 1. She went for 1. And it was, in fact, pot 1 that Brazil were placed in. I don't want to talk about England because we've ended up in a really difficult group and we'll be going home very early and our supporters won't be spending long in Brazil. But Brazil did come out 1 in the pot, so she was our psychic element of last week's show. What I'd like you to do for me this week, and it's a very simple yes or no, so you have a 50% chance of getting it right. I mentioned early on in the show that they were putting odds on a zombie apocalypse happening at Christmas in Britain on the 25th of December, and the odds for that were 2,000 to 1, I believe. All I need you to do for me, yes or no, psychic round, is tell me.
No, it's not going to happen.
Okay, Heather's going to go with a no. The question was, is Heather going to get any points in the rest of the show? And she's gone with a no. I'm suspecting she'll probably be right on that. And
I'll get some points back.
See how that works. I was going to ask you whether it's going to snow on Christmas Day in Britain. Yes or no?
Yes.
So, Heather's... You just changed your mind.
I should get it right then, shouldn't I?
What if you've said yes and no? What if it's just light drizzle?
Maybe.
Wow. Listeners will understand, if you're men, you'll understand that as a woman, you ask her for a yes or no answer and she actually gives you both.
If I go maybe, do I get half the points?
What if it snows? It's not maybe. And if it doesn't snow, it's not maybe. So in actual fact, you're getting no points for saying maybe. Unless you're guessing it's just going to be light kind of hailstones. I don't think there's a category for that. When I say what's the weather going to be like, I don't want you to say to me psychically, there's going to be a wind of 14 knots from a southwesterly direction due to a cold front happening over Siberia, combined with light drizzle at around 11 o'clock and a high of 12 degrees. All I want is yes or no. Is it going to snow?
No.
No. You're sticking with that, are you?
Yes.
So is that a yes or a no?
No.
Kim, help me before I get a gun. What are you going to go for, Kim? Don't no. copy. Oh, no. You can't copy. You are allowed to differ occasionally. Okay, so you're both going to be wrong. Greg, you've got your arms folded and you're looking very defensive. I'm glad to see you're wearing your clothes this week, though, because it is cold out.
I don't think it's going to snow.
It's just three no's. It's going to be, if I go no, the pressure's on me now. I'm going to have to go yes, whether I thought it was no or not. I'm going yes.
And you'll be wrong.
So what do? Share the points out if it snows next week?
Well, you decided this. Now you got to figure out the rest.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to spend a week working on the rules after I've asked the question.
Spend the week working on making it snow.
Don't tell everyone that. I'll be out in the yard with a rain stick. Okay, we're going to move on to our Surely That Can't Be True round after these short breaks. But be sure to stay tuned as we explore further the week's news of the paranormal and strange after these short messages. The Lakes Area Paranormal Interest Group meets bi-monthly to discuss all things paranormal. The group's primary focus is on the topic of UFOs, but they also delve into alien abductions, cryptozoology, Bigfoot, crop circles, ghosts and weather predictions. Come with an open mind and be prepared to discover the who, what, when, where, why and how of these phenomena. Meetings are from 7 to 9pm Central Time in the Banquet Room of the American Legion Club in Wake Park, Minnesota. Visit and find out more information at the Lakes Area Paranormal Interest Group at lapig.org. For people who believe that standing in a cold, dark basement in the middle of the night for hours on end is normal. They also have a Facebook site as well. I may mention that if you go to the Lakes Area Paranormal Interest Group, all the information is there on Facebook, and I'm sure they'd appreciate it if you friended them and liked their page. The Minnesota chapter of the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON, meets the second Saturday of every month at the New Brighton Community Center, New Brighton, Minnesota. Meetings are from 2 to 5pm Central and include investigation reports, open mic, book reviews, videos, guest speakers and experts on moose nipples. Everyone with an interest in UFOs is welcome to attend. For anyone who has experienced a UFO sighting or knows someone who has, this is the place to be. Meeting agendas, driving direction and tons of UFO information can be found at mnmufon.org. We would also like to extend our thanks to Jason from Rhapsody Music in Mankato, Minnesota, for hooking us up with some of the equipment we are using on tonight's show. The staff of Rhapsody do a great job of helping with all of your questions and needs. With a large selection of musical instruments and sound equipment, the staff is always there to help you. If you believe that your business or product would benefit from being mentioned live on air across the nation and the globe to a large target audience of morbidly fascinated and strangely interesting listeners, I would love to hear from you. If it's paranormal and it's in the news, I am talking about it on More Questions Than Answers. In the lyrics and the words of the reggae legend that is Johnny Nash, there are indeed more questions than answers. And the more I find out, the less I know, which means I am probably less intelligent than when the show started. I'm your host, Adrian Lee, famous for being banned in Lithuania, for introducing the world to dirty hobo water, and being the only person around the table tonight committed to its snowing in Britain on December the 25th. If you have just joined us, then where have you been, and what could have been more important? If you've stayed with me, then let me raise your spirits further by saying we still have 50% of the show still left to go, and in my opinion, the best part of the show. I've been handed a fresh cup of tea and the promise of cookies. I have fresh flashlight batteries and my mother has now stopped snoring from the room next door. So onwards, we march. We march into the surely that can't be true round stories of the strange and of the bizarre. I'm going to start this week, actually, with this particular round. I read an article and it starts off by saying, man commits suicide in mall after girlfriend refuses to stop shopping. A man who was fed up with his girlfriend's incessant... We've all been there, haven't we, gentlemen? A man who was fed up with his girlfriend's incessant Christmas shopping responded to her request for one more look around the mall shoe store by leaping 7 floors to his death. Trust me, every man knows what that feels like. The 38-year-old, identified as Tayo Hiseo, has been shopping with his girlfriend at the Golden Eagle International Shopping Center in Zaizhou, China, when he was asked to check out one last shoe store. Having been inside the mall for 5 hours, Tayo had reached his limit and reportedly insisted that they leave immediately. He told her she already had enough shoes, more shoes than she could ever wear in a lifetime. Is it possible women could have more shoes than they could possibly wear in a lifetime?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't have that many shoes.
No.
Greg, than somebody that has totes full?
Ah, Greg's got inside knowledge. There's going to be an argument live on air.
Wait apparently, a minute, you have totes full too.
Well, I have a fair number of shoes, but I'm sure I don't have as many shoes as Kim's got. You know, I have a brown.
Wow.
No, I do. I have.
Sounds like a challenge.
No, I have a brown pair and I have a black pair
and
some trainers
and
some sandals.
How many pairs of trainers?
Well, I have 2 or 3. One's for running outside. One's for going to the gym in. I mean, there's one for clambering over neighbors' yards to take dirty washing. All kinds of.
You never know what occasion you're going to need a pair of shoes for.
Absolutely, you know. And I've got some where the tread's been worn away, so I can't be identified.
You duct tape
by
those.
The footprint. Yeah, it's all there. I've got a whole tote full of those. But he told her apparently she had enough shares in shoes to wear in a lifetime, and it was pointless buying more. Perhaps she was a centipede. It never actually says in the story. She started shouting at him, accusing him of being a skinflint and of spoiling Christmas. It really was a heated argument, according to bystanders. Surveillance footage shows Tao angrily hurling the shopping bags and jumping over the railing onto the cosmetics section 7 floors below. Obviously, he was landing on some firm foundation, I guess. A spokesman for the shopping centre says no one was injured in the incident, and the man died instantly upon impact or contact.
That sounds like an injury. No one was injured.
No one was injured, apart from the guy who died, who obviously injured himself fatally, I would suggest.
May I say that was a terrible joke?
You can do, and that's giving you another -1. It says this is a tragic incident, But this time of the year can be very stressful for many people, the spokesman said. I just hope that the woman actually kept the receipts for the Christmas presents. That's all I'm wondering. Do you think she carried on shopping? Do you think she was the type of person that would just carry on shopping?
I think she went down to retrieve her bags that he already had.
Wow.
I want to know what insulting somebody by calling him a skinflint means.
A skinflint is someone who is...
Cheapskate, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, forthcoming with their money. Just think of a Scotsman and you've pretty much got it. yeah, someone who's not free to, you know, not liberal with their money, I guess. But it's interesting. We've had talk of zombies on the show already tonight, and we've had shopping malls and people being unhappy and throwing themselves off seven stories due to arguments over Christmas. I've been to the Mall of America. The Mall of America, of course, is in Minnesota. It's in Minneapolis. It is allegedly the biggest shopping mall in the whole of the world. I've been there two or three times, and it was probably one of the worst experiences of my life. It just looks like Auschwitz for shopping. Everyone's walking around looking really miserable. I swear, if you walk around the shopping mall, even in your local town, your local city, nobody looks happy. It's almost like they're zombified. You're told in a capitalist society that if you buy this kind of dog food, you'll be happy. If you buy this kind of underwear, you'll be happy. If you buy these sneakers, you'll be happy. And obviously people aren't. They're just walking around. Next time you go to the shopping mall, look to see how many people are actually smiling and enjoying themselves. You're looking at me as if I'm mad. You like going to the Mall of America, do you?
No, I'm trying to figure out your statement where you said, if you buy this type of dog food, you'll be happy.
Well, that's what they advertise on the television. When they're selling...
Why would I be happy if I bought a certain type of dog food?
Because the advert's telling you you'll be happy, because you are in a fabulous house in a middle-class environment with nice green grass and picket fences, and your dog, who's called Ginger, is running up the yard and he's full of vitamins and full of beans, and you're giving him the dog food and he loves you because, you know, he's your pet. And if you buy that dog food, your dog will love you and you will have a fabulous middle class house to live in. Am I just...
Yeah, you're...
I'm going off track, am I? But, you know, it's interesting. I like the way in the shopping, in the Mall of America, they make the food court floor sticky so that blind people know they're at the food part, which I think is a fabulous, fabulous thing to do. People forget
What's
about partially sighted
you?
People. So I'm all for letting partially sighted people eat at these facilities as well, and I think that's a fabulous idea. We should introduce it in Europe. Sticky floors where there's food being sold so blind people know where to eat. Heather, what have you got for me?
Oh, good Lord.
Strange and bizarre.
Yes. Diamond ring worn by Satan herself for sale on Craigslist.
Herself? Well, your mother's arrived.
The world's most dangerous ring is sold by a guy on Craigslist claiming that the piece of jewelry is cursed to bring destruction to every relationship, unless its powers are removed with voodoo priests or similar sorcery.
So who do we know that we can give that to this Christmas?
I have a few. I have a list.
There you go.
I'm checking it twice. That's one way of advertising a product. It clearly draws some attention, but who knows if someone is willing to buy the so-called devilish object if the only thing it's good for is destruction. The diamond engagement ring from hell was posted on Craigslist by a user from Pennsylvania with a price tag of $1,800. Yes, users and listeners.
From a user from Hades in Pennsylvania.
Yes. And I'm trying to give you great Christmas ideas. Describing the piece of jewelry, the user says the ring was worn for a time by Satan herself, and it is likely to be cursed after leaving a path of destruction behind.
I thought Sarah Palin lived in Alaska.
Possible events associated with this ring include, but are not limited to, damage sustained to a house.
Damage to cystitis, yeah.
Yes, vehicle, heart, downed power lines, fallen trees, and swarms of locusts.
Well, that's just what you want for Christmas, isn't it?
The bad mojo ring seems to be quite nice. 14-karat gold with diamonds on the sides, purchased from a renowned jewelry store with a big price tag, which is not to be mentioned here. It seems that the heartbroken man didn't have the luck to marry the woman he now calls Satan's herself and blames the ring for it. This wouldn't be the first case where people accuse jewelry of being cursed. Many have associated bad mojo to different items worn in less fortunate moments. The Hope Diamond is one of those pieces that bring destruction to the ones who wear it. This particular diamond is said to drive people crazy or, surprisingly, make dogs rip apart the one who wears it. Another diamond blamed for disasters was stolen from the eye of the Hindu god statue and allegedly led to suicidal acts of its owners.
It wasn't a Chinese guy. Was he going shopping with his girlfriend last week?
He got it. He got the eye.
Obviously.
The stink eye. To stop the curse, the jeweler cut the diamond into three pieces, hoping that it would be enough to stop its bad mojo.
Being married to Mrs. Satan wouldn't be the end of the world, would
you
it?
You were, weren't you?
You can't possibly mention things like that on air. But I couldn't possibly comment. But, you know, you could toast marshmallows with her. You could, she'd be warm in bed, of course. She'd never be cold in bed, and she'd always be horny. So, you know, these are just off the top of my head.
Never mind, I take that last statement back.
Wow. That, ladies and gentlemen, is the inappropriate bell. Heather, you've gone back down two more points. It's let's see if we can have a week where we actually make a negative score. Might be a bonus for everybody. So you are now on a resounding minus two. Kim, what have you got for me in the round of the strange and the bizarre?
What have you got
You're looking at me with a twinkle in your eye. I know something's imminent.
I'm going to tie into Heather's story, not this one, but the one before. Operation Dead Mouse Drop.
Dead Mouse Drop. Isn't that a game everyone plays at Christmas? Can we have a game of Dead Mouse Drop?
Mouse Trap.
Dead Mouse Drop, Granddad. You never played Dead Mouse Drop with your granddad?
No.
Just me then. Wow. My granddad said he'd show me some magic when I was a little boy, but I couldn't possibly tell that on air. So, Kim, what have you got for me?
A group of 2,000 dead mice equipped with cardboard parachutes have been airdropped over a United States Air Force base in Guam in order to poison brown tree snakes.
Is that a brown tree snake? You had much experience with the brown tree snake? I'm wondering why they need parachutes when they're already dead. Sure, if they're already...
I will tell
you. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I've just jumped in too soon.
It may sound like the plot to an animated movie starring the vocal talents of Gilbert Gottfried, but we assure you this is actually happening. NBC News reports that the dead mice were pumped full of acetaminophen, the active ingredient in Tylenol.
Sounds like Vietnam.
The hope is that the snakes, which are invasive to the area and cause harm to exotic native birds and the island's power grid, I'm guessing that's the main sentence there, will be drawn to the toxic rodents and eat them and then croak.
What are they doing to use up the power grid? Are they like playing stereos and playing Xbox and just draining all the electricity? I mean, snakes don't even have fingers. How do they operate Xbox controls? How's this even possible?
More questions than answers.
Obviously, yeah.
The cardboard is heavier than the tissue paper and opens up in an inverted horseshoe. It then floats down and ultimately hangs up in the forest canopy. Once it's hung in the forest canopy, snakes have an opportunity to consume the bait.
I'm amazed because I thought a lot of animals, I know snakes eat dead mice when you've got them in a tank, you know, in your house, but then they don't have anything else to eat. But I was under the impression that wild animals don't tend to eat kind of dead animals on the back of the fact that they have, you know, disease and things wrong with them, perhaps. Or am I just imagining things? A snake is like, if you've seen Jurassic Park, the Tyrannosaurus Rex recognizes movement, doesn't it? So the reason a snake attacks is because it sees the movement. I get the impression...
I would suppose that there is movement if they're
dangling in the treetops.
Right.
Because, you know, if you see an Egyptian playing a flute with a snake coming out of the basket, the trick is that a snake's mesmerized by the flute being moved just in front of his eyes, and that's why he gets that kind of mesmerized look in his eye, I guess. Heather, you're bursting like a five-year-old who knows the answer to a question in school.
I don't know the answer, but I thought doesn't it have something to do with body heat too?
I know that reptiles are cold-blooded, obviously, so I don't
know. But
they sense the heat, do they?
I thought so.
Well, again, there are more questions than answers. Last week it was moose nipples. This week it's why do snakes eat mice? We shall do some research and find out for you next week. Do you have any
more
to answer that?
One final
I was going to say, I could see that you were leading to
this program is costing $8 million.
Well, I'm glad the American taxpayer is paying for putting dead mice marines into the forests of Guam. There must be easier ways to kill snakes, surely.
I mean, we can drop little chess pieces.
I'm thinking those mice
there
would have preferred to be made into chess pieces.
Oh my. This is the show More Questions Than Answers with Adrian Lee, the only paranormal news quiz anywhere in the world. And Kim, you should have many points for that story of mice, dead mice.
Mouse droppings.
Dropping into the junk. Mice droppings. On a story of mice droppings, I will give you a resplendent 4 for such glorious things. We move and we stumble to our final round of the evening, which is not for your mother. If you're not aware of this round or you've not listened to the show before, the excitement in this studio is palpable. I can feel the energy in the air. But if you have your mother in the room at the moment, or you have minors or small children running around, this is the time when you might want to remove them. These are the stories from around the world on all the news sites that perhaps contain elements that you wouldn't want your mother to hear. Heather, you are bursting to jump in. I can see the excitement written all over your face of the stories you have for me. It's going to involve testicles, isn't it? I can tell.
Maybe.
Okay, let's hear your first story in our round, not for your mother.
I need points, don't I?
You need many points. You are currently on -2. Just to get into positive numbers would be a result for you.
-2, the number 2.
Uh-huh. Okay.
We're good.
We're bearing that in mind then, okay.
You're bearing down on 2.
Just get away. Right. I want to go home. It's cold out. It's snowing.
Prank at Home Depot leaves Georgia woman glued to a toilet seat.
Well, that's always... Greg, it wouldn't take 1 minute, would it, to leave the studio, honestly. You're going to have to clear that up, but you know that. Juice anyone? You give the guy an iPod with sound effects on and suddenly it's like an autonomous dictatorship. It's quite outrageous. You're going to get -5 for that, Greg.
I'm a grown woman who can't even sit up, woman
says. Yes, you
says.
Are. Oh, sorry.
You're such a... I was stuck probably over an hour.
Only an hour.
A Georgia Home Depot suffered serious injuries after she was glued to a toilet seat in the restroom for more than an hour as a result of an apparent prank.
Did the police have anything to go on while she was sat there?
What's wrong with you? Ileana de la Cour went to the Banks County store with her sister and brother-in-law the day before Thanksgiving. And she is still couch-bound nearly 2 weeks later because of her painful and embarrassing ordeal.
That's got to take the skin off, isn't it? You're down to the bare bones almost there.
Well, it was at a Home Depot. I would think they would have a product to help with that.
Why didn't they just unscrew the toilet seat?
Well, she's probably sat at home with the toilet seat still on her ass, isn't it? Quick, draw a smiley face on it. Look, Mummy, she's smoking a cigar.
De La Cour's sister shot a video.
That's what you want from your sister, isn't it?
The paramedics working to free her.
Well, I bet that's become family viewing every year.
It's probably on YouTube.
I suspect it is. If you put on toilet seat, Home Depot, and glue, you'll probably find it.
After a few attempts, left her screaming in pain.
I'm laughing up. Go on. Poor woman. That's ruined her Thanksgiving
and Christmas.
Have you been
screaming in pain while on the toilet seat?
Well, I did go to a Taco Bell a few weeks ago.
De La Cour was finally freed when the rescue crew used WD-40 to release her rear end.
The thing is, the entire fire crew's there, and ultimately, you've got your panties around your ankles, haven't you, is what's happening.
Just in case you get stuck, I see that Greg has a can right behind you.
Well, I don't know why Greg has got a can behind me, but... one can only imagine.
The painful,
yes, WD-40.
The painful process left her with ripped skin, several wounds, and lots of questions.
Several moons.
I couldn't understand why they weren't just taking me to an emergency room and having the doctor remove it, she said. She wasn't in her right state of mind to okay an experiment on her. It worked, but I don't think she should have been there, said De La Cour's sister. The Home Depot representative said the third party is now handling the case.
Handling it. Surely the key here is hovering. Everyone must, surely I've been to France. Their toilets are like the Alamo, are the first 20 minutes of Saving Private Ryan. You have to hover. It's hovering is what's required.
Saving Ryan's privates?
Is it Shaving Ryan's privates?
Yeah, that too.
I'm glad you must have seen that film. But the trick is to hover, isn't it? You need to hover. Flesh must
not
touch.
Do you hover?
If I was in Home Depot, if I was in a toilet that wasn't particularly... Well, first of all, men stand up, don't they? You'd only be hovering if solids were involved.
Yeah, do you hover?
Not when I'm at home, I don't. But if I'm out and about, I may have a hover, yeah. Depends. I mean, some old soccer injuries come into play, obviously with my knees, but I'd like to think I could hover with the best of them. Yeah. Why? What do you do then?
Just go.
Just go. And this is what happened to this woman. She'll probably be part of that fire services calendar for next year. Wouldn't that be quite funny? I know firemen do calendars where they kind of strip off and, you know, they're looking buff. It'd be much
better. How do you know that?
I'm European, madam. But it would be much...
I wanted, my stocking.
A fireman calendar. I'll see what I can do for you this year. Do they have to have their chopper out, or are they just...
What?
Obviously, that doesn't translate well.
No, then. But the hose would work.
Oh, man. And this is why, ladies and gentlemen, your mother should not be in the room, and we have an inappropriate bell. I shall give you a nice number two, and you are now back on zero.
Did they film it and use it for a training film for the rest of the country?
That's possible. Yeah, this is what happens if people are stuck on toilet seats.
It could be on the WD-40 site, you know, as extra uses.
This is More Questions Than Answers, sponsored by WD-40. People have been stuck on toilets on aeroplanes because there's suction involved. And the larger ladies don't leave any room for air to escape. And there's been ladies that have flushed toilets on aeroplanes and literally been suctioned onto the...
Who flushes while they're on it?
Well, this is why it happens. I think a stewardess has to come in with a straw, grease it up, squeeze it between the cheeks and the toilet seat.
And blow.
And blow is what's required. Those ladies just don't get enough money, do they? Wow. Well, I've got a story here from Germany, of all places. Again, not for your mother, this particular story, but police in Dresden in Germany say they've arrested a 55-year-old police officer on suspicion of murder after the body of another man was found in the Erz Mountains in eastern Germany. Investigators believe that the two men met via an internet site for cannibalism fetishists. I bet that's a dwindling membership, isn't it? I mean, it, you know, that membership reduces by 50% every time a couple meets, I guess. The suspect denies eating body parts and says he killed the man at his request. The dead man lived in Hanover and has been reported missing. Well, it might take him 24 hours to reappear, I guess, under those circumstances. Oh. Police say that the victim was killed and dismembered, and his body parts were buried on a piece of land in the mountainous regions which belonged to the alleged killer. Police say that body parts of the victim were missing, and it is possible that cannibalism may have taken place. Dresden Police Chief Dieter Kroll told a news conference that the victim had fantasized about being murdered and eaten since his youth. The two men met at Dresden's main railway station on the 4th of November, police and prosecutors said, and shortly after their meeting, the 59-year-old businessman was killed with a knife. After the victim was reported missing by his business partner, investigators found a trail of electronic communication which led them to the murderer. The two men are not to believe to have met prior to the fatal date. Mr. Kroll said the case shows how people with the most gruesome fantasies can get together on the internet and produce a podcast show on the internet and live out their perversions in an even starker form. 99% of those involved satisfies their desires by exchanging information, he added. Or the odd finger or ear, I'm guessing. The only time, I guess, you could ever say your foot is repeating on me. How very... very strange. Isn't it odd that someone has a fantasy of being dismembered, cooked and eaten? Because ultimately, the point where you die is the point where that ends. You don't actually enjoy the fantasy of being eaten, do you, if you have that kind of perversion, because you're no longer there.
What part do you eat first?
Well, I don't know. Where would you start? There's so much to choose from. Maybe a calf muscle. You could perhaps get a shank of leg and run a skewer along the shin bone and kind of just turn it slowly so the fat drips on your potatoes. I have no idea what
so
you start with.
The fat drips on your potatoes? What potatoes?
The ones that are underneath the barbecue spit. I've thought about this in... This is where you want. You don't want to mess around. An ear, for example. I mean, you just want to show it the pan. You know, 20 seconds on each side of it, it's going to go
flash
rubbery.
It.
Yeah, you flash fly an ear.
You flash fly it.
You fresh fly it. Like a flying
fresh fry.
Oh, yeah. You want sore finger, fish and chip? I am, you know, if you put an ear in a pan, surely for any length of time, it's just going to go rubbery. It's like seafood, isn't it? Octopus, squid, ear. I mean, show it the pan, each side, mustard, honey, piece of toasted bruschetta, herbs, fresh spices.
Tomatoes.
Mean, oh, you don't want to ruin it. What's wrong with you?
Do you taste like chicken or do you taste like pork?
I would imagine you taste like pork, don't you, is what's been said. I had a great uncle. And during the Second World War, he was captured in North Africa, and he spent 3 years of the Second World War in a prisoner of war camp in North Africa under German regime. And he escaped several times, but he escaped into the desert. And after a week, he had to give himself up because he was dying of thirst and hunger, despite the fact that he was filtering his own urine through the sand. But subsequently, people died in that camp and they got burnt. And he told me in a moment of lucidity that he said that human flesh smells like roast pork. And from that point on, he said to his wife when he got back from the war that she was never ever to cook roast pork for him because it brought back terrible memories. And they say the smell and the sensation of scent is one of the most powerful in terms of bringing memories back. But yes, I believe, to answer your question, I believe that that would probably taste of pork.
What is that called? Is that Soylent Green?
Oh, yes. The Charlton Heston film where at the end he says Soylent Green is made of people. That's an Edward G. Robinson's last ever film, believe it or not. A fabulous cult underground science fiction film from 1974, I believe. If people haven't seen that, then I recommend that they do. Do you have one last story for me tonight in the area of Not For Your Mother?
Mexican teen reportedly injects crocodile into genitals.
What's a crocodile?
I shall tell you.
Okay.
Public authorities in Mexico shared details of a gruesome case of the flesh-eating drug crocodile, the first to be officially reported in the state of Jalisco. According to Jose Sotero Ruiz Hernandez, an official with the Mexico's National Institute of Migration, a 17-year-old girl in Puerto Vallarta... Puerto Vallarta.
Okay.
Presented lacerations to her genitals that she said were caused by her addiction to crocodile. The young woman who used the drug had an infection that had rotted her genitals. It wasn't sexually transmitted. She said she'd been using crocodile for the last 2 months, according to a Huffington Post translation of the Mexican newspaper El Periódico Corico. The woman told authorities that the drug was readily available on street corners. Hernandez added that the drug has also been reported in Mexico City. Crocodile is a street drug with effects similar to heroin that is made by cooking crushed codeine pills with household chemicals. You'd want to put that in your body, wouldn't you?
Oh, absolutely. I'm no surprise that parts of her body are rotting at the moment.
It is significantly cheaper than heroin, and reportedly 10 times as potent. However, the impurities in the drug damage vascular tissue, which causes the flesh to rot. So yes, her genitals are rotting off.
Excellent. That'll be a fabulous Christmas for her. How did it get there? Did she say she
injected it?
She injected it there. Why? In God's name, why?
Because I'm sure she didn't want the track marks or the marks to be seen, so... She injected them there, and
It's vascular, I guess. I know
if I had to dig further into it, I would say that's where everything gets evacuated from. And so as it's coming out of the body, perhaps.
I have read stories where people have injected heroin, for example, into a penis because it's the only vein left in their body that literally hasn't collapsed. God. But on that same tract, I did read that Errol Flynn, the famous film star, of course, from the 1930s...
Injected his penis?
Well, he put cocaine down it because allegedly it acted like Viagra back in the 1930s and 40s. And I did read stories that he used to do that. So again, on a similar tract in many respects. But thank you for cheering us all up for the last story of the evening. That was great.
I thought rotting genitals would make you happy.
Well, I'm going to go to bed now with that in my... As I'm drinking my hot chocolate and I'm snuggling up for the evening in a cold Minnesotan bitter winter breeze and snow outside working its way up the side of the house, I will sit there all cuddled up and warm and cozy in the knowledge of thinking of a Mexican's rotting genitals. So thank you for that. That's just great.
Oh, as opposed to your flesh-eating people.
My flesh-eating people?
Yeah, your cannibals.
Oh, my cannibals. Well, it's like, well, at least the flesh is fresh.
The flesh is fresh.
That should be a tagline on a film. Like the films that Greg watches.
That's it.
The flesh is fresh. And that, ladies and gentlemen, brings our show to a grinding halt. Well, all good things come to an end, so let us look at tonight's scores. In last place, the K2 meter with the dead battery is indeed Greg, who says very little, but when he does, he gets negative points for it. He is on -5. In third place, Heather, you have actually made, you're dancing around and you're looking all happy, but you have actually made 0. Is that classed as a positive or a negative score? Is 0
maybe?
Is 0 positive or negative? There are so many questions, it makes my brain hurt. We are tied for the lead. We will share, Kim, the $33,000 IR camera. You can have it on Tuesdays and Thursdays and Sundays, and I shall have it for the rest of the week. And we will argue over the spare day that 7 days divides into. Do not fear, listener. Remember, we are back with a whole new bunch of stories next week at the same time, and I would love for you to join me for a fun and informative journey through the world of the paranormal, the very strange, the very intriguing, the very bizarre, and the very weird. Please tell your friends and family about the show, and feel free to contact me anytime via my Facebook site. More questions and answers with Adrian Lee, or email me at mqta@rockymount.com. The faces they're pulling are just incredible. My gratitude and greatest thanks are extended. The wind will change and you'll stay like that. Do you know that? My gratitude and greatest thanks are extended to Lorna Hunter, Heather Morris, Yaton Drainer, Kim and Greg Gore, and all at the International Paranormal Society at intparanormal.net, where you can also read my blog, of course. And all of the show's sponsors, including the Lakes Area Paranormal Interest Group, MUFON of Minnesota, and all at Rhapsody Music in Mankato. Stay warm, enjoy your festive time, and don't throw yourself off of shopping malls if your partner wishes to go and buy more shoes. It just remains for me to say thank you for listening, and remember, be interested and interesting. Good night.